Chapter six is on government. This first chapter, first lecture, and the first slide says, "What is market failure? A condition that arises when unrestrained operation of markets yields socially undesirable results." Now, here's the point. Up to now, we have been talking about the free market, and we talked about supply and demand, and productivity, and the market can do many wonderful things. But can the market provide us with everything we want or need? And the answer is no. And since the answer is no, we've had to modify the market because of its deficiencies. And that's primarily what this chapter is all about. What this chapter is all about is why and how have we modified a free market system to provide us with certain things that we want or need. Economists call this market failure. The economists would say, well, the free market fails in these ways, and therefore we have to modify the market this way. See, how does the government establish and enforce rules of the game? It safeguards private property and enforces contracts. See, if a person says, I own my home, well, why does that person own their house or own a car?
Sign a contract for it.
And that contract is a legal document, correct? So if someone comes to you and says, I'm going to take this house away from you, or I'm going to take this car away from you, what can you do? Well, if they say, I don't care about that contract, that's just a piece of paper. I got a big club, and I'm going to take this car away from you anyway. What can you do?
A judge.
Yay. See, the whole point is that legal document gives you backing of what? Of the law and law enforcement, right? You can go to the authority and say, this person's trying to steal my house, and I got proof here, I got a contract here, and it's my house. And they say, well, we'll go help you and get your house back. See how that works? See, this is the beauty of a private property. And when you have contracts, those contracts have to be enforced. You know, I once, in my early years, taught mathematics in junior high in the inner city of Detroit. I did that in my first 4 years of teaching. That's what I did. I remember, there were days when we'd just look out the window and watch the bank robbery go on across the street, and we did that. And it was a very violent time. It was during the race riots in Detroit and everything. But the reason I mention this is that in those days, police cars had emblazoned across their side, "Protectors of Liberty." Protectors of Liberty. Because you see, that's really what law enforcement. If you have good laws and you have law enforcement, an enforcement of those laws, then that's how we protect our liberty, right? So what is the role of government? Well, government has a lot of uses here and lots of ways that it modifies the system or at least enhances the system. Let me just go over these real quick. Weights and measures. If you flew to California and you bought a gallon of milk, would that be the same size container as if you bought a gallon of milk here in Virginia?
Yeah, probably just a different price.
A different price, but same size.
Or
more expensive. But a gallon is a gallon, correct? If I say this is a foot, you got a good idea of what I mean, right? You can go somewhere else. And that uses foot in inches, and a foot's a foot. So we can all agree on how much a pound is, how long a yard is. You know, we take this for granted, but, you know, this is a big obstacle back in the Middle Ages. You know, when people would go from town to town in the Middle Ages, well, you know, one village would think a foot was short and another town would think a foot was much longer. I mean, you know, there was no agreement on a uniform system of weights and measures. So how can we all agree on how long a foot is? Well, we have to have a central government that says this is how long a foot is, and we're all going to agree upon it. Without government, you know, a free enterprise system can't do that. See, the point I'm making here is that we need a strong central government in order for a free market system to operate. A free market system does not mean the absence of government. In fact, it's quite the opposite. A free market system can only function with a strong central government. But there are right ways of doing things and a wrong way of doing things, which is something that, you know, we look at. But even a, you know, a person that's very much of a free market, you know, free enterprise, leave it to the market type person, you know, that person still says, well, you know, we still need a strong central government for this, that, and these other reasons. And that's what we're going over now. See, these are things that all, you know, both Austrians and Keynesians can agree to. A strong national defense. You know, we're way beyond the point where a local militia can protect us from a foreign enemy. So what do? Well, we all pay taxes, and a part of that tax money goes to support the military, and then we can build a military defense that hopefully will protect us against foreign adversaries. Well, you know, that in today's world, that's not possible unless we have a strong central government. Now, there may be a disagreement on how much we spend on the military and exactly how we spend the money, but there's no disagreement on the fact that, you know, this is an essential role for the federal government. Public goods. Public goods, they're private goods and they're public goods. A public good is a good that everyone can share, like roads is a public good. See, if it weren't for the government, how would we pay for a road system? Anybody? If it weren't for we have roads that go from Dublin to Christiansburg, correct? You know, from, you know, where mall campus to the Dublin campus. Well, how are those roads paid for? And how would those roads be paid for if it weren't for taxes?
They'd be cobble roads.
They would be what roads?
Cobble roads.
Well, but how do they be paid for?
By individuals.
Well, how would individuals pay for it?
I don't know.
What? Toll road, yeah. The only other way to pay for it is toll roads. What we'd have private, you know, individuals, you know, business people buying up stretches of land and then putting tolls, you know, on that land.
And that's going to clog up traffic.
Yeah, that's the point. See, now, if that were the case, I mean, if all roads were paid for by, you know, private enterprise, you know, we're saying, well, we don't have government here, you know, to pay for roads, so they're going to be privately, you know, private investors are going to pay for them. Well, how many toll roads might we have between these two campuses? We might have as many as 10 or 20 or 30 different toll roads. You know, you drive for a little while, you get off, you pay a toll, you drive on the next toll road, get off, you pay a toll, and that's what you do. See, now, and also, if there's no government, is there going to be any uniformity in the roads?
Yes, sir.
No, some will be gravel, some asphalt, some just dirt. Some will be wide, some will be narrow, some will have stripes on it, some won't. I mean, see, there's no, if it weren't for government, there'd be no uniformity to the roads. So imagine driving between here and California on nothing but toll roads. See what I mean? Yeah. So how can we build roads that we can all drive on and they're all uniform, they're well taken care of, and we don't have to pay tolls. How do we do that? Taxes, right? We need a government in order to collect taxes to take that money to pay for the roads. Now, what taxes is that? Anybody know that?
Gas tax.
Gas tax, exactly right.
And Oregon's actually recently enacted a per mile road tax, where you pay about 1.5 cents per mile you drive.
Oh, wow, really?
They record that by plugging a device into your vehicle. I think it's, you can either do that or pay for the pump.
Well, they can't hear you over there. What he's saying here is that in what state?
Oregon.
In Oregon, there are ways to pay for the roads other than gasoline taxes that they charge per mileage that you drive every year. But actually, you know, that's not so different, because if every time you buy a gallon of gasoline you pay a tax, who pays the most taxes?
Big trucks
and people who drive the most, right? The more you use the roads, the more you pay for the roads. Now, is that a fair way of doing it?
Yeah,
that's pretty fair. You know, that's called, you know, the use way of taxing. You know, the more you use, the more you pay.
Yeah,
but the point I'm making here is that if it weren't for government, would that be possible? No, see, see what I'm talking about here is, a free market system is a wonderful thing, but can it give us everything we want or need? Well, it can't give us a good road system. Or it can't give us another public good, would be public education. I mean, if it weren't for public education, who would get educated in society? People who could afford it. You know, that's the way it used to be. You know, if you happened to be born into a wealthy family, well, you know, they would make sure you had a good education and you get a good education. But I mean, if you were born into a poor family, well, they didn't have money to educate you. Where today, you know, no matter how poor you are, society pays for public education and you can get a good education. Now, that's good for you, but it's also good for society. It's good for society because if people are educated and they've got some skills, then they tend to be better citizens, you know, law-abiding citizens, than if they could not read or they did not have skills. So you can build a better functioning, more law-abiding society, I mean, everything else being equal here, if your citizenry is well-educated. But how is that possible? Well, you need a government, they tax, and then we provide everyone, at least through the 12th grade, with, if, you know, education. And how is that paid for, by the way? But what's taxes? What taxes pay for education? Property taxes. When you live in a neighborhood, you pay property taxes. And the majority of those property taxes, or at least a good chunk of it, goes to the schools in that area. So who pays the most taxes for the schools? People that own the biggest houses, the most expensive houses, or land, pay the most, right? Was that a pretty fair way of doing it? I mean, you know, the more you can afford in terms of the size house you live in, the more you pay. Well, it's not. You know, let's not get into all the details. You know, if you include farmers in here, she mentioned farmers and they have lots of land and they might pay much more than maybe, you know, they should. But I don't want to get into that. The whole point I'm making here is that why we need government, right? And we need, you know, a public good. We need government for public goods, and one public good is public education. And the way most of that money is raised is through property taxes. Gasoline, it's gasoline taxes. Public schools, property taxes. So anyway, those are what are called public goods. A public good is a good that once it exists, then everybody can benefit from it. You know, the public benefits from it. That's called a public good. We also need government to protect us against the social costs. Now, A social cost is something that the system generates, but it's not a benefit. It's a cost. For example, maybe a good example of a social cost would be pollution. You know, we like the cars that Detroit makes, but we don't always like the pollution that goes along with those cars. In fact, we call that pollution a negative externality. A negative externality is a byproduct of the industrial process that's undesirable. So, something that we didn't intend to happen, but it just came along with the process. Now, I once thought that if business people had a social conscience, I mean, if they felt guilty about running their liquid waste into the nearby river and, you know, killing all the fish, or you know, if they felt guilty about, you know, letting all this smoke into the air and causing air pollution and causing all kinds of illnesses, that if business people just had a social conscience, that they could make the decision not to pollute.
They'd be out of business.
Exactly. Is that possible? No, it's not. You show me the business person that has a social conscience, and I'll show you a business person that'll go out of business. It's not possible. And yeah, it costs. I mean, like, you know, for example, let's say there's five companies that produce widgets, and let's say that to begin with, their costs are the same, and their size of the market is the same, and they're all charging the same price. Well, let's say you're one of those five, and you happen to develop a social conscience. You feel guilty about polluting the river and polluting the air. You know, another negative externality is unsafe working machines. So what you do is that you spend more money buying safe machines. Oh, I'm sorry, did it again. My elbow. Thanks. Where was I? Feel guilty about buying machines that are unsafe, so you buy machines with safety devices on it. You feel guilty about your liquid waste going into the river, so you find ways to dispose your waste where it doesn't harm the environment. And you put scrubbers in your smokestack, so you filter out the pollutants that way. Well, what happens to your cost compared to your competitors?
They go up.
Yeah, and you've got to increase the price of your product to make up for the increase in cost. Well, you've done nothing here to improve your product. Now, let's say that product is paper. You got five paper companies here. Now, people walk into the store and they see, you know, paper from these five companies. They're all the same quantity, same quality. But your paper is more expensive because you had to pay for your, you know, anti-pollution devices. Well, what are most people going to do?
They're going to buy the paper.
They're going to buy from your competitors. Even if many of those people knew that the reason your price was higher was because you had a social conscience, you think most people would pay more money to help you? I'm just guessing, but I would guess probably not. I'd say that most people would still pay, you know, buy the less expensive paper, especially if it's the same size and same quality. Therefore, what happens to business people that have a social conscience? They're going to go out of business eventually. And pollution can be a very serious problem. Very serious problem. So, what is the solution to pollution problems?
Law.
And how can we make everyone abide by the same laws? We need
government.
See, this is another way. Well, if it weren't for government, then you know, we'd all be choking to death from pollution. We need government to make the certain standards that apply to everybody. Now, there can be a great disagreement on what those standards should be, right? I mean, you know, one person might say, well, standards ought to be this high, and another person say, well, you know, you don't have to make it that high, because, you know, the higher you make the standards, then the higher your costs are going to be. So, you know, that has ramifications. So there's a lot of disagreement on exactly how we should pay for anti-pollution devices. But there's no disagreement in terms of that this is a viable role for government. See, this is another reason we need government. The free enterprise, this is a market failure. The free enterprise system fails in terms of protecting us from pollution. Okay? Another function of government is that it encourages merit goods. A merit good is something that is, well, it's a merit. It's good for people. That and there are things government can do. You know, for example, when I go shopping for in a grocery store, I like to know what I'm buying. You know, I like to read the labels and know what's in this thing that I'm buying. Well, you know, would food producers put all their ingredients if it weren't for government?
Probably not.
Now, I'm not sure. I mean, maybe some would, and maybe that would be a good marketing ploy. I don't know. But the point I'm making is that is a merit good, you see. You know, that the laws that says, well, if you're going to sell to the public, you better tell the public, you know, what it is you're selling them. And so that's an example of a merit good. So another function of government is that it helps the poor and disadvantaged. That there may be many people that need help. Now, there can be some, you know, some people would say that, you know, that's really not the proper role of government, that, you know, private people and private, you know, churches and other, you know, social organizations are the ones that should help people, not, you know, not from the government. But there's still a good argument that, you know, that you know, there are people who may need help that may not get help if it weren't for government. Now, for example, take unemployment benefits. There can be a good argument made that if we had had unemployment benefits during the Great Depression, in the early years of the Depression, in the 30s, that the Depression would have lasted a lot, it would have been a lot shorter and wouldn't have got quite as bad. See, when people become unemployed, there's a social reason for paying them unemployment benefits because, well, you know, these people may be unemployed through no fault of their own. Isn't it good that the government gives them money for a time being, for a certain period of time, to give them a breather room, you know, breather time in order that they can, you know, look for retrain or, you know, look for another job? Well, that's a good economic reason for paying unemployment benefits. But, or at least it's a good social reason. But the economic reason is that if we have growing unemployment, the last thing in the world we want is a bunch of people not spending money. Right? If a bunch of people become unemployed and they say, well, I can't spend money, demand goes down, businesses find themselves with excessive inventory, they cut back production, they lay off more workers. Those workers now have no money to spend, perhaps. Demand goes down more. Business find themselves excessive inventories. They cut back production. They lay off more workers. And so unemployment feeds upon itself. Well, how do you reverse that trend? Or at least how do you slow down that sequence of events?
Circulate money.
Well, and how do you do that? Through unemployment benefits. See? People become unemployed. Well, we give them money. So they can spend money so businesses don't have to cut back production and lay off more workers as much as they would otherwise. See what I mean? So unemployment benefits in terms of increasing unemployment act as a brake on increasing unemployment. So there's a good economic reason for paying unemployment benefits, as good as well as a social reason for paying unemployment benefits. But could we do that? Could we pay unemployment benefits if it weren't for government? No, see, that's what I'm saying. We need government in order to do this. Well, we do all these things, of course, through taxes. And there are all kinds of different taxes. And we're going to get into those different types of taxes. See, what I'm doing now is I'm kind of giving you an overview. And then next time, next lecture, we'll kind of more get into the specifics. Establishes and enforces rules of the game. Well, it's, you know, the economy can be like a sport event. Now, take football, for example. Football can be a very physical sport. And people can get hurt playing football. But are there strict rules of the game? Yeah, there's strict rules, right? You know, every 10 yards you get a first down, so many men on a team. And who's there to enforce those rules? Referees, right? Well, that's kind of like what the economy is. You know, the economy can't function unless there are clear and concise rules that everyone can agree upon. And we need a law enforcement authority to make sure that everyone abides according to those rules. Then we can have a free market system. See, can we have a free market system if it weren't for that? Could we have a free market system if we didn't have rules that everyone could agree upon and we didn't have a law enforcement authority? Well, we couldn't have a free market system. It'd be chaotic, exactly. Well, that's exactly the point. It would, without rules and enforcement of those rules, we would live in chaos. But in order to have those set of rules that everyone can agree upon, we need a strong central government. Okay? And I'm trying to get through this before the end of the period here, promotes competition. Now, there is something natural that occurs is that, there's sort of a natural law that says that he who has will be given more, and he who has not and what he does not have will be taken away. Now, that's as much of a law as a law of gravity. You know, does that sound like a riddle, by the way? He who has will be given more, but he who has not and what he does not have will be taken away. I think I mentioned this before in one of my earlier lectures, but if you put money in a savings account, you're paid interest. Now, in today's world, that may be a bad example, right? Because last time we talked about how many countries now have negative interest rates where you actually got to pay a bank in order to park your money there. And even in the United States, you're getting a very low interest. But let's just assume here that, we live in a world that makes sense, and you put money in a bank, and the bank pays you interest. Well, why does that bank pay you interest? Because you had money. Now, because you had money, what were you given?
Interest.
Interest, more money.
Okay, that makes sense.
You can also apply it to the stock market. You know, I mean, who puts most of the, you know, who can afford to put the most money in the stock market?
People who have more money.
People who have more money. And as stock prices goes up, who gets the rewards? People who have the money. You know, if you have money, you're given more. Now, if a car costs, let's say a new car costs $20,000, and so you go to the car lot, the car dealer, and you give them $20,000 in cash. You drive away. How much that car cost you? $20,000. Now, let's say you go to buy a new car, but you know you don't have $20,000. You know, maybe all you got is a couple thousand dollars. So you can buy the car, but you got to buy it over time, right? You got to borrow the money and pay for it over 3 to 5 years. Well, maybe that $20,000 car ends up costing you $25,000. Well, how come $5,000 was taken away from you? Because you didn't have the money, right? Because you didn't have money, what was taken away from you?
$5,000. Money.
See, if you don't have money, money's taken away from you. Now, isn't that right? I mean, if you charge on your credit card, but you can't afford to make, you know, pay it off every month,
interest. Then
you pay more and more interest. Well, how come you pay more interest? Because you didn't have the money to pay it off every month. You see what I mean? But if you had money to pay it off every month, and you've got a, you know, like a my credit card, I've got mileage, I mean air miles. You know, last time I flew to Oregon, me and my wife, my card paid $1,500 for my airfare. Well, how come money was given back to me?
Because you had money?
Because I had money. See? Now, if I had paid interest on that, well, then that wouldn't have been so true. But if I pay it off every month, I don't pay interest, and yet I'm given all these perks. Well, how come I do that and someone else doesn't? Because maybe I got more money than they do. So the point I'm making here is that as time goes on, I mean, if you understand this law that says that he who has was given more, and he who has not, then what he does not have is taken away, as time goes on, what happens? Well, we get fewer and fewer people that have more and more and more, and we have less and less, but we have more and more people who have less and less and less. Well, how do you reverse that uneven distribution of wealth? Well, again, that's a lot of what government does, right? Government taxes, hopefully they take more money away from the wealthy than the poor, and then a lot of that money, it goes to what? It goes to our social programs. So it reverses this trend of more and more people having less and less, and less people having more and more. Yeah, you had a question?
I was just going to say, it's not so much like if you have money, yes, if you have money, you make money, but I mean, it's more so if I put $20,000 in the bank, the money that I put into the bank is going to be loaned out to Billy Bob, who wants
Well, yeah, because if you have money, what she's saying is that when people put money in the bank, that bank lends that money out, and other people gain from that, right? But they, you know, pay interest. I mean, the system's supposed to work that way, although it's working less and less that way all the time.
Well, that's why, like, if I put $25 in a savings account, I may get, like, 0.5% interest, while the bank is making 10% interest on
that allows the bank to make money. Yeah, that's how banks make money. They pay, this way it's supposed to work. Now, you know, we live in a strange world today. But the way it's supposed to work is that banks pay one interest, a lower interest, and then lend it out at a higher interest. That doesn't always work that way, but, you know, we're going to talk more about that later. It promotes competition, regulates natural monopolies, I'll talk about next time, promotes a more equal distribution of income, well, that's what I was talking about, and strives for full employment and price stability. Well, we'll talk about that next time, too. Anyway, it is time to go, so I'll finish this chapter 6 next time. So I'll see you all next time.